welcome to the Mac Show. Yes, we're here to discuss all the stories that have gone in the world of Mac, all the Apple stuff that you're afraid to talk about, but the things that you tell your children to keep them scared at night. And Terry's video's crapped out. Jesus.
I'm using Skype Preview for some reason, and I can't find where to change the camera to the right one.
What? Like, that's an excuse, eh?
Like, what the hell is this?
Joining me to discuss the world of Apple, luminaries from the Apple world, and Terry, starting with Adam. How you doing, mate?
I'm doing all right. How you doing?
I'm all right, mate. Show us your T-shirt.
Oh, yeah.
How did you get that? And how much did they pay for that?
My buddy Paul over at Rogue Amoeba sent this.
See,
to me
now,
yesterday.
Now you've been on the BBC, mate. The sponsorship is pouring in.
Yeah, no, they've never been a sponsor. I would love them to be a sponsor. They're a great company.
Oh. Mm. Do they do shirts in my size? FB?
I would assume so.
Yeah, you wish. I get no T-shirts that work.
Good to see you guys.
And you, mate. Great to have you here. Next to him, Terry, for the first... Is this the first time on the Mac Show? Or what have you done with your camera, man? You look like...
No, I actually...
The Dark Lord.
I've got a cold. I do look this shit.
Oh, well, that's fair enough. That's okay. But you've, with the background and everything, you do look... No, that's too far much camera. But you're very dark. You're very contrasty, buddy.
I know. What's going on?
I don't know, mate. Maybe it's because you're on a crap microphone in an echoey room.
Oh, wait, I can sort the microphone out as well.
Yeah, good. All right, we'll leave you to that then while you do your thing. Congratulations, by the way. You're going to be a popper.
I'm going to be a dad. I can't wait.
Christ.
Only 15 weeks gone, but yeah, that leaves the rest of them.
Well done, mate. It's the hardest job in the world and the most thankless task you'll ever do.
That's really depressing.
No, it is, but it's true. When the kids are 15 and they're going, I hate you, you're a bastard. But it's gonna, you'll get through that, hopefully.
Well, that's my stepson's just turned 18, so...
Is that what he says to you already?
Yeah, pretty much. For the past 9 years, since I've known him, actually. You
know, he can't believe you married his mum.
that's pretty much it. And now we're having a baby, he knows that we've had sex. Which is even more disturbing.
And he's 18. Christ. Naive beyond comparison. And recently returned from his trips to Poland and his recent accomplishments and some artworks, no doubt. And soon to take on Romania, it would seem.
Yeah.
Patrice Brendamore.
Hi. How are you?
I'm good, mate. You're coming over to see us.
Yeah, sometime in November, very likely.
You're going to come over and go for curry and do the show.
Yes.
And have some, see the new Apple store in Birmingham that's vastly overcrowded.
Yeah. I mean, you know, that's the real reason why I'm coming. It's not the curry, it's not the Mac Show, it's actually the Apple store. No, that's not true. But
absolute git. How was Poland last week?
It was really awesome. I mean, really great people, great country as far as I could see. Good food, really good beer. So I had a great time. I mean, it was really stressful. I'm freaking tired, but it was worth it, so I'm happy.
Yeah, but if you get to eat and drink, it can't be bad. And they do make good beer, actually. I have to say, the Polish beer that we get over here is excellent, even though it's probably brewed in Burton-on-Trent, as Muller correctly pointed out. Following on from last week, we've got to start us off. There was a passing comment made on the Big Show where I was talking about Echo, and I was saying at least Echo gives you a verbose feedback and tells you the answer to the question that you ask it when you say, Alexa, can you tell me? And Siri doesn't do that. She just gives you a set of web links. And Jeff on the show said, no, it doesn't happen that way. And lo and behold, he got a set of web links. He didn't get a vocal response. A few people have listened to the show and have written emails or they've made comment in the Slack room that they have had verbal responses to the simple question, who is the President of the United States? So you're not to say, hey, Siri. You're not to put any of the context to it or any, what's the word I'm looking for, past tense or present tense. Just say, when you talk to Siri, hey Siri, or just Siri, who is president of the United... No, sod off, Siri. Sorry, Matt, I didn't mean it. just... my phone's gone off. Who is president of the United States? And see what he or she comes back with. Because last night we did a little bit of a test within the Slack room, and it was very mixed as a response. Some people were always getting verbose responses.
The answer is Barack.
Who's that? Was that
just you? That was me. Sorry, I forgot to unmute myself. I asked her just. It worked.
A few people.
I would argue it wasn't very mixed.
It was mixed because
It was mixed a little, but not very mixed.
Oh no! Come on. So there was people that were only getting web links. There was people that was only getting verbose links, and I was stood in a very rural
all right, now
setting.
I'm gonna go count.
And in six attempts, I got four that were web links and two that were verbose replies. And I couldn't work out why. And there's no pattern. From what we saw last night in the Slack room, there is no pattern to this. And it was interesting that Hobbs in the Slack room went out and he found a story that said that Apple is fixing some Siri glitches. On 95 Mac, Apple recently fixed some Siri flaws, says it focuses on enhancing common queries. But it doesn't say how it's doing it. But I thought it was dead interesting. And yeah, Walt Mossberg has come out today, and for all my slagging off of Walt Mossberg, he's basically said, and I'm paraphrasing, I do admit, Walt, Siri's shit.
Yeah, I can just confirm it. I did the same query twice, and the second time I only got web links.
There you go. So you got verbose.
I wonder, you know, they have multiple servers and data centers and stuff like that. I wonder if it could be something related to something like that.
It's got to be something to do with data speed, I think. Whether you're on 3G or 4G or something like that. Or
I don't think so. I think it could actually be what Adam thinks. I mean, if it hits another server and it's not responding correctly or not in time, then it will simply produce web links.
So you just think you're getting handed off?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, or it could be sort of like Patrice alluded to, there could be just a too aggressive, like a timeout on the server side, because they don't want a slow response coming back.
Yeah.
So it's sort of like, okay, if I don't get the verbal response within, you know, this many milliseconds, just send them a web link. I mean, it could be like a fallback in the programming. That would make sense to me.
Yeah, because it's harder to have a proper 100% correct response instead of simply web search that you can just do and whatever comes back return.
I mean, what Mossberg's saying, you know, why does Siri seem so dumb in some of the stuff that's gone on in the Mac Rumors article that I'm reading. In recent weeks on multiple Apple devices, Siri has been able to tell me the name of major party candidates for the president and the vice president of the United States, or when they were debating, or when the Emmy Awards show was on, or the date of the World Series. When I asked it what is the weather on Crete, it gave me the weather for Crete, Illinois, a small village which, while I'm sure it's great, isn't the most popular suggestion that you might have to answer for. So, and not the Greek island.
She could be smarter.
She could be an awful lot smarter. And I think it ties in last week to the comments that I made that of all the vocal stuff, Cortana's killing it. Echo is killing it with Alexa. And Siri is trailing fairly far behind.
Well, why do you think Apple's putting so much investment over the past 6 months in artificial intelligence and those sorts of core? I think they recognize it, but they're behind. I mean, if they're just hiring people over the last 6 to 12 months, it's going to take another 6 to 12 months before you see improvements.
Yeah.
They should have focused on it earlier. Fine. I mean, we can accept that.
No. Yeah.
But I mean, that's literally probably what happened is, you know, they jumped into Siri. They were out there with a voice assistant before anybody else. And then everybody else is like, well, we better catch up. And they invested more on the, I think, on the what it can do side. They also have the advantage still, though, of being able to tap a much larger data set, too.
Because
they don't care as much about privacy.
Yeah.
So, I mean, for the scenario that Mossberg's trying to imply, I mean, one of the things you need to build into there is location stuff, right? You want to know the location the person's at, and if they're asking about a certain place, I mean, popularity plays into it too, but you should be factoring all those things that's been a frustration that I've had, is like Siri knows a lot about me right now. It should be factoring that data into its results, but she doesn't for whatever reason. And that's what leads to this perception that she's kind of dumb.
Yeah, but I mean, in this case, it was the other way around. I mean, the right. dumb answer would have been to select the popular choice, and it actually was smart and said, hey, Crete, Illinois is closer to you, so I will pick this one.
Right. So in that scenario, right, she should probably be coming back and asking for further color. If there's ambiguity in the result, she should be smart enough to ask, did you mean, you know, are you looking for... I don't know what you'd say back. I mean, you'd have to figure out what makes intelligent sense there, too.
I think, I mean, as a general question, what's the experience like with Siri at the moment? For me, personally, if I'm sat in the office, I get a good response. If I'm on Wi-Fi, I get a fairly great response. If I'm stood out in the wilds, it's patchy. And if I'm driving, it's almost non-existent. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I've still got 4 bars and 3G listed on the top left-hand side of the screen. So I still should be getting good results, but because I'm moving, I'm not. And I'm getting the wobbly line of Siri's voice going, you know what, I'm thinking about this, to the point that I'm going, you know what, forget it. By the time you've come up with where I need to go, I'm going to be there already, man.
Yeah.
Right. It frustrates me still to this day, and I hate to keep coming back to this thing, but it seems like such a small thing, and there's no privacy issues involved, it bugs me that I can't, when I put location data in into my calendar for meetings, why I can't simply say, give me directions to my next meeting.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, she has the data.
I
can touch on the calendar icon and get that information instantly. Mm-hmm. Why can't Siri process that is beyond me. And that adds to this, what you're talking about, Ewan, this sense that she's not very intelligent.
Yeah. I want to address one thing that Deepan said in the chat room. He said, Apple has always been bad at cloud-based services and it doesn't seem to have improved much. I mean, one, I don't think that is true. I mean, they've been bad at certain web services, definitely. But I mean, on the other hand, the app stores seem to work pretty reliably. I mean, you can think about the software quality in itself, but the cloud part seems to be working. And I can definitely attest that today it is the cloud-based services are better. I mean, if I look at what CloudKit is doing for developers, it is really solid and reliable and works. So they have improved. Maybe not enough. That's a different story, but they have definitely improved.
I'm not wishing to, being as you're on and you've mentioned CloudKit, Patrice, having set up Alexa to control my home lights and other things, is there not an element of the fact that HomeKit is there's too many hoops to jump through?
It's not about HomeKit. CloudKit is basically an API that you can use for your apps to basically have a web service, have a database in the cloud for your apps, even for web services and for websites now. For developers, it's nothing that is directly accessible for users. It's really just back-end for a lot of apps now. Even the Omni Group, for example, I think, or AgileBits with 1Password are using it and are saying it is good.
Yeah, this is a back-end thing, so the developers don't have to stand up their own cloud servers and services and things like that. So if you want to build cloud functionality and syncing and stuff within your app. I mean, it's not just syncing, it's way more than that, but Apple's providing the servers and the services and the APIs to integrate that stuff into your apps. Yeah.
And quite a lot for free, to be honest.
You say it's free, but the back end is definitely the payback through the fact that they get apps that attract people to the platform.
Of course, right. I mean, Apple isn't doing that just out of the goodness of their hearts. They have a reason to do it. But I mean, for developers right now, it is pretty cool.
Terry, are you waiting for the big show to talk, or you want to jump in any time, mate?
No. I was listening. I mean, obviously, can you hear me? By the way,
yeah, we got you fine, mate.
Cool. So, I mean, I was kind of listening, really. I don't know a lot about Siri because I don't use it. And we've had this conversation before, you, and that I'm not a massive I don't know what the word is, but I don't depend on my devices that much in terms of being vocal with it and asking it for things, mm-hmm. mostly because I'm in some very public places usually, and I find it quite bizarre to stand there and say, mm-hmm. okay, Google, you know, what's the weather like in Cyprus or something like that. Or I do use it at home, and I only use it for reminders. So to kind of open up on that, I can't really say much. What I do think is I totally agree with you guys about it being late to the game. Siri was one of the first adopters, but it's kind of like they've become complacent and they've just kind of gone, well, yeah, you know, we launched this. Let's just see what everybody else brings up. And they've kind of just sat there waiting, really, rather than doing. And now I think you're absolutely right. They're a bit late to the game and a bit behind the schedule. So it'll be interesting to see what happens within the coming 12 months even, or even 6 months with them, and what they can do as a provider. I would really like to see kind of a mass adoption now that it's more available. So I've got it on my Mac, and I use it about as often as I use Cortana, which is never. So I'm not the right person, I suppose, for this, but I guess in one respect I am. You know, why am I not using it? You know, considering I'm so reliant on tech, and I can't, again, I can't really say why. So yeah, that's my two cents on that, I'm afraid, and it's not much, but let's say I do agree with you guys in respect to them being late to the game anyway.
I think one of the things that I've found, and particularly since I bought the Sonos speaker from Paul Wheatley, I absolutely adore that. It's been one of my great mm-hmm. purchases of the year. I think it's an unbelievable quality speaker. But one thing it's made me realise is that actually I almost I've got to invest in an Apple device for home that does all of the home automation for me. So having having got Alexa now through the Amazon Echo, she's great. I can say, Alexa, turn on the hall light, and the light comes on. And it's perfect. It's absolutely seamless. It works unbelievably. But I've got the iPad that I set it up on the day that I opened the box and did the little review thing on Periscope. And now I'm realizing that actually that's no use whatsoever for the house. I'm going to have an iPad at home that deals with Alexa and home automation, a coffee table iPad, if you like, to a certain degree, to make it work. And Doxing, don't worry, I can edit.
Oh, I showed up in the middle of a break.
No, you showed up in the middle of a conversation, which I'm impressed that you showed up at all, mate. Thanks very much. Do appreciate it. It's okay, man. I'm just taking the piss.
Yeah.
Just calm down. It's all right. Doxing. I'm just impressed that, you know, I've got to have a device that is nothing more than controlling the home equipment.
Right.
Now. It's the Internet of Things has taken over now. There's an interesting story that, so Virgin Media, I've had great service from, I complain about them bitterly, but I've had great service from Virgin Media the last couple of days. And they turned up today and put a new hub into my house, and everything works absolutely smoothly. But I had a call from the wife, like, you've got to come home, the internet's gone down. No, it hasn't gone down, it's just we've got a new hub, so we need to correct that, and I'll need to set everything back up again. Oh, okay, fine, but you need to come down because I need to print something off. Okay, and she's the one that when I try and explain something to her, she's like, no, it's technology, you deal with technology, I don't deal with that, it's not me, pfft, off you go. But as soon as the internet goes down, it's like, come on, Alexa's not playing music. When I go, Alexa, play me some music. And she's got into that kind of stuff. She loves the home automation. She likes sitting there and going, Alexa, turn the hall light on. She's got into it in less than a week because it's functional, because it actually works, because something happens when she says something. And to an awful lot, she's got her iPhone 6 that I handed down to her when I got the 7. She doesn't use Siri because when she says, hey Siri, nothing happens. And that's the difference.
That's not my experience on the HomeKit side, just to be fair.
Okay,
and
great.
I use it at my house all the time. And Siri can turn on my lights. She can tell me the temperature in the house. She can...
Yeah.
Everything that I've automated does work with Siri, that everything that's HomeKit compatible.
Yeah, right.
I think that's kind of what I'm waiting for, actually, now you mention it. I think the ability to actually just go like, okay, Google, play me three doors down or whatever, and it just gets three doors down from the Google playlist and plays it to me or whatever, which I don't think it does currently. But I would like to be more verbal. I would like to be more active with it and just say, you know, okay, Google, open up this app and start doing this with it. And I don't get that with it. So Siri sounds like he's also lacking in that.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, and
she will respond to play a certain artist or a certain music, and it also doesn't even have to be things in your playlist, and you could ask her extremely general things, like yesterday, for whatever reason, I was just in the 80s mood. I was cleaning up, and I was, you know, going through some old stuff, and then I just yelled to the Apple TV, hey, you know, what's her name, play me some 80s music, and she pulled out this playlist that was, like, pretty epic. Like, I was almost ready to go, you know, get my punk rock gear and throw it back on and, you know, bring back the 80s. So it's gotten better. But I got to agree with you in the standpoint that Siri compared to Alexa compared to Cortana, she's the dumbest bird of the three.
Yeah, I think one thing we should mention is Siri has improved. There was a question from Bronwyn in the chat room about how she compares to the initial iteration. And I mean, if you remember back, she was pretty bad at the beginning. I mean, sometimes she didn't understand you at all, or she, I mean, got the completely wrong answer to you, or it took a very long time to get anything. And I mean, I know because Apple has released some information that they have overhauled the entire back end. It's now machine learning and so on. So they have done a lot. And I mean, I remember, I think with watchOS 2, I think they also improved it Siri vastly. And then I think it came with the next, with iOS 9 in this case, to the iPhone. So they have improved it. It's simply feature-wise and reliability-wise still way back compared to the others.
Yeah, they're behind.
We're not going to dogpile on the fact that they are behind, because we've all agreed that that's the case.
Yeah.
But I mean, in terms of interaction with Alexa, if I say, Alexa, turn the hall light on, she doesn't need an internet connection in order for that to happen. And I know that because I've lost my internet connection in the last couple of weeks, thanks to Virgin Media. So as long as the network works, she will switch that light on and off. And with Siri... Right. Mm-hmm. Does Siri then just go, do you know what? I can't do anything because I've got no connection to the net.
Or does Siri
I'm pretty sure she doesn't do anything because of no connection to the net. And, you know, again, one of the things that's the most challenging, and I agree with Patrice wholeheartedly, with watchOS 2 and even with the iPhone 7 Plus, like, Siri's gotten so much better. But I think the huge challenge that I find anecdotally is when trying to get people back on board who... tried Siri 1, you know, back when, what was it, the iPhone 4, they won't touch it because, you know, that first impression. Yeah. So, like, you know, if someone meets you on your best drunk day, and now you expect them to know that you're actually an intelligent tech pundit now, you know, they're like, man, the first time I met that dude, he was pissed drunk, acting a fool. And I think right now, that's the biggest challenge for Apple, that has gotten great, but a lot of people still won't go back and touch it.
Yeah. I mean, HomeKit for you, Adam, you run it regularly. I know you do, Patrice, as a developer.
Yeah, I don't have a lot of devices, though. Okay. Go ahead and ask your question.
But does it need internet connection? Is only network connection enough, or does it need internet connection?
No.
To be honest, Siri
does all of her vocal processing online. So, I mean, if you don't have you don't have an internet connection, it's not happening.
HomeKit itself works without any internet connection. As long as you're in Bluetooth range, it works without it. It's simply Siri itself will not do
manual
it.
Manual stuff, yeah. So I can manually open up the HomeKit app and flip things without an internet connection, but Siri won't work and I think it's only because the vocal processing is all done on Apple's servers.
Which does seem kind of limiting, a little bit
it does.
Silly, no?
Yeah, I mean, on a day-to-day basis, it really doesn't matter for me. I've not once had that issue. I mean, other than, well, sometimes Siri on the Apple Watch seems to lose connection to the internet entirely while the phone still does it. But if I mean, as I said, that probably happens once a month. Other than that, I've never had any issue because my internet connection is reliable.
Yeah, and I would venture to guess, Ewan, if Apple ever does, and I think they should be doing a, I mean, we've talked about for a long time, the next gen Apple TV needs to be a home hub like the Echo is.
Yeah.
You know, you remember right now, I mean, all of Siri's functionality audio wise is built in and into your phone. You know, the Echo is much larger than your phone. There's a lot more tech that can be put in there than is in your phone. And it only has to do the one task. You know, it's really only there to do that functionality, whereas your phone has all these other things that it needs to do. So, you know, processor cycles and all the other reasons. Sure, the phone is, you could argue the phone is powerful enough to probably do the audio processing locally, but Apple must have a good reason for not doing that yet.
The thing is that the thing that I find interesting is the fact that if you've got home automation and you bought into home automation, which I have, it seems illogical that just because I get a connection to the outside world disappears, that I can't control my house when it's set up for home automation.
I agree. And I'm sure Apple does too, and I'm sure they're working on a solution for that. They just don't have it today.
Fair enough.
Well, yeah, because you got to know, like, you want to get dependency on data centers down anyway, because that cuts down some of your costs, in all honesty.
True. Good point. Yeah, definitely. We've had a fair few stories about Apple stores in the UK. We did run the competition, by the way, and the winner, without a doubt, is Apple Intercourse for the which is apparently Intercourse is a town in America.
Right.
Where else? But the most prudish nation on the planet has a town called Intercourse. So whoever wrote in with that, we've got two people, I think, who sent that in. They get the prize. I don't know what the prize is, but we'll sort it out. Thank you very much. We've got some new Apple stores here in the UK. We've got Apple Regent Street, and there's a picture of it. And actually, it's that's very similar to what was there, if you like, to a certain degree. I can't remember if the columns were there. I think they were. There wasn't the whole load of palms, but that's not dissimilar to the front entrance that was. But...
No, actually, it was two floors and no columns.
Yeah,
I remember.
No, I think there were columns, but I think the columns supported the second floor.
And yeah, it could be.
There is no second floor anymore. Where you're seeing the people stood there at the back in that picture, that's actually where the presentation area was. And there's actually, so if anything, that looks like they've made it smaller to a certain degree, perhaps.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, they opened it up, and they probably have less... usable square footage, but yeah, so you're saying that thing that's up there in the back above the presentation screen, that isn't an area. Stage.
That was a stage where they used to have presentations from people who were doing an educational center stuff for, and they used to get a lot of artists and musicians area? In. Yeah, they used to get, there was an upstairs area. So where you see the columns there on the left and right, that actually was floor space that came back.
Right.
That had, on the left-hand side, it had audio equipment and the DJI Phantom and all of the Parrot stuff. And on the right-hand side, it had cases and shelves and stuff for your iPad and MacBook Pro. And that bit at the very back was actually a presentation area, stage, where you had... visual equipment where you could do a presentation, and you had the Genius Bar on the left-hand side of that. That looks a significantly smaller area than available use space than there was originally.
Yeah.
And a lot
it
more
still space looks better.
For French blokes to smash screens. in Birmingham, they've done the same thing, and effectively they've taken the Waterstones bookstore and they've turned it in. Muller took some pictures, but I haven't loaded them up. But they're very similar in terms of the layout of that store. They've got for a lot more presentation space. And Steve actually went into the store at Birmingham, and he said he couldn't work out where the Genius Bar was at all, which is kind of surprising. And also, we've got the planned, as Adam puts it, Tim Cook's chocolate factory at Battersea Power Station coming along. now, Battersea, you're all sitting going on that Apple has bought Battersea Power Station, they're going to turn it into
stop.
Other people might be thinking that Apple have bought Battersea Power Station and they've turned it into a massive chocolate factory for Apple equipment. But it's not the case. There is a massive housing development on both sides of the railway tracks, because I filmed there over Easter period.
Right.
There are big flats going up there, and we're talking small flats that are massively priced. It's a very expensive area of London to go to.
Like £1.5 million.
It is.
Yeah.
600 square feet.
And Apple have bought a bit of storage and a bit of retail and plenty of offices in that space, 6,000 square feet or something. So they'll have paid a pretty penny for that, but it's attached to Battersea Power Station because Battersea Power Station is a listed building. So they're investing heavily. But
yeah. You know what's interesting about that whole thing? So, yeah, to me it looks like, you know, it looks like Willy Wonka's Chocolate Factory. And apparently what's going on, because this was misreported, I think you're right, there were a number of sites that were sort of alluding that this was Apple's new UK corporate headquarters. And it is, they're kind of consolidating all of, they have workers all throughout, I guess, London and stuff like that, that area in the UK. And they're going to take 14,000 employees and sort of consolidate them in this Battersea Power Station building that is part of a much larger redevelopment project that's going on in the UK, where there's going to be entertainment and retail and stuff like that. But they are going to be the biggest tenant in there. They're occupying like 500,000 square feet across like six floors of that building. So it is consolidating there. The other interesting thing about that building was literally like the day before I saw this announcement, I was watching Children of Men, which was on Netflix or might have been HBO now. And that building is featured in that, and it has the flying pig, because I guess that building's also famous for being on the cover of the Pink Floyd Animals album with like a flying pig on it. It was interesting to see that. And one other thing about Children of Men, the security system in that film, if you're paying close attention, is run on a 20th anniversary edition Mac.
Oh, it's interesting, because I thought you were going to say that Children of Men was shit.
You didn't like that movie?
Oh, it was crap, mate. It was utter bollocks.
I hadn't seen it, and I had heard good things about it, and I liked the actors that are in it.
It's got some great actors with an absolutely horrifically edited script. So,
yeah.
Otherwise,
but anyway,
it's brilliant.
That building to me looks like Willy Wonka's Chocolate Factory. And I thought then, too, maybe they're planning on hiring some Oompa Loompas to take some of the pressure off the bad stuff they get for using workers in China.
Apple's Oompa Loompas. There we go. Thank you to Deep Pan. He says, there you go. That's exactly what the Regent Street used to look like. And I was right. The columns were there all along.
Yeah.
There we go. Straight the way through. They've just got rid of, and they've reduced the floor space on the store.
Definitely.
Significantly.
Yeah, to be honest, I didn't like the Regent Street. I was there a couple of times, and I mean, when you walked in, it was, I don't know, dark and just not really friendly to walk in. Like a lot of Apple stores, to be honest, sometimes, especially in shopping malls.
That space right there looks almost like it was a mirror of the Union Square store in San Francisco before they moved over to the new digs.
I can honestly say that I love the Regent Street store, and the reason I love them is because my Apple MacBook Pro crapped out, and I took it to them, and they went, yeah, it's dead. And then Genius said, why don't you join the joint venture program? Then I can give you another Apple laptop to take away back to work that you can boot up from your external hard drive, which I'm going to pop out and give you a reader for. And then when you come back, you'll have yours back. And when I went in, they said, Apple 2-year warranty? Electronics warranty. Yes, thank you. That'll do. Thank you very much. So I love the Regent Street store. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry to see it go, because they were absolutely brilliant to me. Well done to the staff there, because I'm a hard man to please, but they please me greatly.
Wait, is it's gone, or they just redesigned it?
They've redesigned it, but it's gone. You know, it's not the same. The surface area has disappeared. There's no more Parrot drones to buy.
Well, now they can buy Parrot drones inside there, because it's much more
absolutely
open.
Absolutely, there we go. And here's a picture also that Deep Pan's put in of the development that's going on at the old Battersea Power Station. Now, if you look there,
looks awesome.
Well, you can see you can see to the top there. Do you see the railway line that goes between the blocks of flats at the very top third of the image? They replaced all of that railway line at Easter, and I was there filming that. And the blocks of flats that they were throwing up, they haven't put any of the bottom left up. They've only put those top two up on the right. But there was people living in the ones above to the north of the railway line there in the picture. And they are not cheap flats. not cheap.
Well, like I said, they're like a million. I have two million pounds for tiny bases.
Yeah. Most definitely.
I mean, but that's London.
That's London. And Battersea Dogs Home is just on that gravel bit there that you can see on the left-hand side.
Uh-huh.
And that was nice. And I didn't hear a single dog bark. They've got good insulation there. I was there for two nights and I didn't hear one dog bark for all of the whole time I was there. That's got nothing to do with the Mac Show, but never mind. Since when has that been an issue? Tim Cook meets Nintendo's Shigeru Miyamoto during a Japanese visit. Come good on, job. Guys. You've got to get excited. Doc, are you stoked about this?
I'm stoked because you perfectly said Shigeru. Like, you didn't butcher it, and normally my friends would screw that up. So Ewan's on the board today.
Thanks, man.
Academy Award here.
Arigato.
The only thing is, people, nerds in general, have been crying forever for us to get some of that Nintendo catalog over. And we got Mario, or some people like to say Mario, earlier. So I just think of the other things that might be coming. I know my Zelda friends want to pour a little liquor out, hoping that, you know, we might get Zelda on the devices. So yeah, it'll I think happen. It might be awesome
when Mario hits and makes $1 zillion. You'll have Link not far behind.
Yeah,
Patrice is moaning that his face is frozen. Yeah, but
I'm frozen again. It's, yeah, but it's another not, really cool face.
Yeah, but it's not your own face, dude. So that's okay.
No,
at least it's a pleasant look.
Yeah.
Have you got wood, by the way? Yeah, that's a good question. Because at 53 minutes in last week's show, Patrice said he liked wood.
Yeah.
Just in case anyone didn't listen. Come on. We've got Mario. We're waiting for Mario. We've pre-registered for Mario, which is unheard of. A pre-registration for an iOS game is just sad.
Right.
Have we got more stuff coming from? We've got to have more stuff. I mean, why would they do it if they weren't planning on opening the floodgates?
Yeah, I'd go for that. I mean, I totally agree with you. I mean, the position that Nintendo are in, you know, where, what, a few months ago we had them being saved by Pokemon, and now the Pokemon craze has died out. Actually, I think it's probably made Apple realize just how much money there is in these classics that we, you know, that our generation that are now, you know, powering their empire onwards, are actually quite nostalgic about and miss, because that was when we were growing up, you know, and the same for even the older generations that remember this stuff as it was coming out. You know, I imagine that would definitely be something they want to be cashing in on now.
So, well, go on, sorry.
And there's going to have to be more titles, because they're going to learn real quickly how the mobile app ecosystem works. Especially when it comes to, you know, 90% of game titles, which is they come out, they're huge for about a month to 3 months, and then they die, and then you've got to do the next one. You know, the App Store is all, for most developers, is all about the grind. It's, you got to pump out a bunch of titles really quick every year. You know, if you can do dozens, you're going to make it. And that's just the new app ecosystem. That's how people are. You see it all the time. People get enamored with an app. It gets huge. And then it's on to the next thing. It's our society now. So it's not even just Nintendo or Apple or anybody else. Just, that's how you sell apps on the App Store. Talk to most developers. And with a few exceptions, that's how it works.
Yeah. I was going to say, I mean, you are almost right there. I mean, there are exceptions to that. You know, whether you look at the Supercell games like Boom Beach or Clash of Clans, and they have introduced a new one, just obviously because I imagine tying into that kind of regenerative new app ecosystem. There you go, technical words there. But at the same time, they update often, and they bring out new features often, so you get new things. So even if you've been playing, I think I've been playing Clash of Clans for about a year now, and I'm just at a point literally last month where I was just like, oh, this is getting boring now, and they brought out new things and they're doing new things. So I think that's part of it as well.
But you pay for those, right? I mean, it's another
You can choose to pay to play. It's one of those ones where you can buy gems and get better or get the advantage by buying gems. But otherwise, you know, you're looking at just playing it casually and taking your time to play it.
But I mean, they're giving you a reason to come back to that game. So it's either you produce a new title or you have some in-app update that is significant. I mean, the example longevity that I would point out for me is, you know, I play Hearthstone. So they're constantly coming out with new updates and new series. And that's to keep people interested. So Nintendo's either going to have to follow that model, but my guess is it's more going to be with the way like a game like Pokemon was and the way it looks like this Mario Run game is, they're more looking at, you know, probably a new title every 3 months or so, and it'll be huge for them. I mean, they're going to do, you know, several million dollars with each one, and you just keep pumping out these little mobile games.
The thing I've got to say is that, I mean, you guys didn't own a ZX Spectrum, did you?
No.
What?
There is a ZX Spectrum. So all of the Americans didn't own it because I don't think it was released in America. Muller did. I did. Terry's too young.
this is true.
Is it like a Neo Geo?
It was the first proper computer. You could sit and you could program it in BASIC. You had keyboards and you remember
those? Oh, it's like a Trash 80.
No. What's your name? Adam. In our country, it was kind of released as the Sinclair.
Sinclair said Spectrum. There you go.
Yeah. We called it like the Sinclair 4. I had one, so now I can say I had one.
Right, okay. So on that platform, there was some seminal games. There was Jet Set Willy, and there was Manic Miner, right? And Manic Miner was released on iOS, and it was £1.49, and I bought it in a heartbeat. There was no way I was not going to buy Manic Miner, and there was no way I was not going to buy Jet Set Willy, because they were seminal games that were just, and they were playable. They were only 2D platform games where you jumped from platform to platform backwards and forwards. They were no more advanced than Donkey Kong, but they were proper games where you really struggled to get to the nth degree on them and finish the levels, and I still think they're some of the best games that have ever been made because of the limitations, especially, that they had on graphical performance. And I bought those because they were out there. And I would spend $4.99 on every single Nintendo game that they fancied releasing. And I am one in 1 billion people who would do the same. Not releasing Nintendo games to the iOS platform is the stupidest friggin' move you could possibly make, and the Nintendo boards need to be friggin' sacked immediately. ZX Spectrum games, which were essentially shit, compared to stuff that came out on Nintendo, you know, I would buy in a heartbeat.
Yeah. The reality is, though, they've got their own ecosystem that they wanted to. I wouldn't say that they do want to now. I think they realise that they're missing a trick with portable gaming. But, you know, the DS is just, I mean, it's pretty much been made obsolete by mobile gaming. I mean, that's the bottom line. Nobody will have a PSP in 5 years' time. Nobody will have a DS in 5 years' time. And there will probably be no other gaming device other than our mobile phones.
The greatest thing of the statement that you've just made, Terry, is that the DS2 actually is fantastic as a doorstop. It is. It's the right friggin' shape.
Well, there you go. And that's what they'll be used for.
Doorstop.
Exactly. This doorstop. It is exactly that. I can't get over that. I mean, there is nothing in my brain that makes me realise that Nintendo is making savvy moves as far as their IP is concerned, because they should be selling it left, right, and center. They should be raking in money hand over fist.
Yeah, I think they'll get there. I think you'll see it over the next year, the transition away from their mobile platforms to doing licensed stuff. They're not going to kill both, and I think they're very smart to keep them separate too, because as much as I agree with Terry that mobile, dedicated mobile handheld piece is going to decline, I don't think it's going away, because you talk to hardcore gamers who are into that stuff and they love their DS, they love their handheld thing, and they don't want that experience to go away. But it's getting smaller. And if you want to hit a whole new market of potential gamers, which I think is what they're discovering with like Pokemon Go and stuff like that, there's a whole new market of gamers that aren't into the Nintendo platform. Like, I don't care about the Nintendo platform, but would I buy and love to buy, you know, love to play a Mario game on my iPhone? Absolutely. I'm not going to buy a DS though. No. But I'll give them a buck or two for their Mario game. And I think they're realizing that now.
Well, I think the other problem that you've got is that if you look at your market is about referral. And the referrers are the five people that you see sat here. They are the ones that will pull out the iOS game and say to their son or daughter, oh, you got to download this. This was awesome when I was a kid. Right. And I've shown Ellis Manic Miner, and he's gone, yeah, but, and he's played it and he loved it because it's a very simple game. It's a platform-based thing. It jumps up and down, and it's a skill-based issue, and he can get through it. And if you're not careful, people like us are going to be the ones that are too far down the line because we're talking to our grandchildren then, not our children, saying, oh, God, Mario was the bee's knees when I was a kid. Because our parents, right. You know, our kids are going to look at us and our grandchildren are going to look at us and go, yeah, but that was then, Grandad. You know, Bill Haley, Jesus Christ, but where's he now? And that's the problem there. The big market is referrals. It's not advertising.
I don't think they've missed the boat, though, and I think they're getting in. They're late, but they're not leaving themselves on the dock.
The issue is, not to be kind of a downright, but the issue is literally that you're going to have them releasing all these games that they've been reserving for themselves, and then where they're going to go, they're going to have to look for new titles and to be innovative. And you know, there's only so many Marios that you can bring out and so many different versions of it. But that said, you know, I think it is surprising what they can come up with sometimes. I remember them coming out with a new Mario on the Wii, and it was like playing Mario Brothers 3 again. It was amazing. In fact, I think they even packaged it with Mario Brothers 3 in there as well that you could play separately. I can't remember the name of the game now. But it was amazing. It was 2D, and you could play it between the four of you. If they brought out something like that, that would be wicked. You'd be able to play like all four of us just going, yeah, I'm going to be Luigi, you be Mario. All right, let's go. Let's do this. Yeah, but that's me getting excited over nothing. Probably won't happen.
Yesterday, someone on Reddit posted a link saying that the new MacBook Pros in 2018 would have an e-ink keyboard, which would be configurable based on sales rather than being a set format. So effectively, you could take your keyboard, and no matter which country you sold it to, it would end up being the correct keyboard for the correct market. Discuss.
I would absolutely love that.
I think that's awesome.
I think that's awesome. It's great. It's great for someone like me who's multilingual to be able to switch back and forth. But then, you know, just function in a way that I'm used to functioning on the keyboards that are speaking the language I'm speaking at the time. Because it is somewhat of a challenge to kind of rejigger things around every time I want to type something in Japanese or Korean.
I think one of the real, sorry, Patrice, because you can follow on from this, definitely. Having worked in Germany an awful lot and having tried to send an email back home, the fact that the Y key is not a Y key, it's a Z key on a German keyboard, it drives me mental. So even just a small change, I think this is massive. Go ahead, mate.
I mean, as someone who is constantly switching between a US keyboard and a German one, because, I mean, my MacBook is German, so I can resell it. But I, other than that, use the US keyboard because it's better for development and I'm writing English all day long, so I don't need all the umlauts and everything. That would be amazing. I mean, I love that I can switch on the iPhone, switch between languages in a heartbeat, and I would love that, to have that on the Mac, because it drives me insane that I have to use the German keyboard if I'm, I don't know, in a meeting somewhere and I don't have to have my wireless keyboard with me.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
You know what's funny, Patrice, is we use a lot of umlauts and doctans here in Hawaii because there was a large German presence in Hawaii in the early colonization after the Brits, and we stole all of that from you guys. Well, by we, I mean they. So when I have to do a lot of addresses or call places of importance here in Hawaii, I have to go switch. Apple luckily has a Hawaiian keyboard, so I can switch to get to my umlauts and whatnot, because it's so much of a pain in the butt.
I actually learned to type umlauts on a new S keyboard because it is possible if you know how. It simply, as I said, it drives me insane. If it would switch, it would be amazing.
Yeah. The other advantage of a keyboard like that, especially if they open up an API to developers, is you could have for gaming, for video editing, for Photoshop or whatever, you could address certain keys and have that reflected, you know, in real time and update that thing. So yeah. Deepan is reminding everybody about that. Remember the Optimus OLED keyboard in the chat?
He's absolutely right. That one is expensive.
There is actually a keyboard out there called the Sonna keyboard, which does this. It's an e-ink keyboard that you can plug into your Mac. But Apple, whether it's an actual filing for patent, I don't know. But it might not.
The key is the OS integration, right? The OS integration and an API for developers. You add those two things to this. And that's when it really
great
becomes
story. Yeah.
Powerful.
Yeah, most definitely. Didi. Giving
as in Puff.
Chuchung, I'll give him a board seat following a $1 billion investment. So allegedly Apple are going to take these people over, but it's not the case. They've only invested heavily within them. And this is all to do with automation and of the or not automation, but the auto market, isn't it?
It's R&D for their future car service. I'm convinced that's what that relationship's all about.
This is an Uber-esque type service, isn't it? So
I think Apple thinks the future of personal transportation is going to be an on-demand car service. So we won't buy cars in the future. We will just subscribe to iCar or whatever service that Apple has. You pay X dependent upon your usage and in real time call up a vehicle when you need it and then takes you where you need to go. You get out and it drives off to take someone else.
What they've got here effectively is nothing more than an Uber type service. But right. You're saying that they're throwing their shekel behind a fully automated, programmable, run on the street without, you know, fully automated car.
Right, and I think they're going to try it out and test it out through the relationship with Didi Chung in China in the next probably 5 years.
Because the regulation would be lower, therefore.
Well, and plus, I don't think the Chinese community is a huge car community. They're more apt to, like, if you tried to do this in the U.S., U.S. consumers would be up in arms. They'd be like, what do you mean you're going to take away my car? You know, I think they're going to start it off and do it in a market where, you know, people don't have that attachment to a personal vehicle.
I think the bigger restraint is going to be regulation.
Well, that too.
It's only that. Absolutely. I think it's only that. You go to Japan, I don't wish to suggest that there are people that you can buy in Japan, but there are people who would be open to persuasion in Japan about an automated process within a fallow city somewhere. And a bit more fatalistic approach to human life, whereas in the US, I'm sorry, but I speak from experience. Having done stuff in Taiwan, if someone get knocked over in Taiwan, there is a lot more it was their time than there is insurance claim orientation. Whereas in the US, it is extremely litigious. In China, it is not. So if you're talking about Apple creating an automated car system to rival Uber, then the place to launch it is China. It's not in the US, which is Google's issue. I don't mean that callously. I mean that, you know, just brutally honestly, there are people that you can use in China that will be more likely to accept it than you will ever get in, I mean, California. Jesus Christ, the litigious element of California doesn't even bear thinking about, surely.
I agree to a large extent, and the reason why something like this works in places like China or Japan and stuff like that is the sheer compactness and the sheer amount of people that you have to move in a set amount of time in a limited space is one, but also like in Japan, driving is sort of treated as a privilege, not as a right. Over here, everyone assumes it's their right to drive, which it is not. It's a privilege. So, like, for instance, in Japan, you spend about $6,000 to $7,000 just to get your initial license, and you spend about $3,000 a year to keep a car registered. And so what that does is it moves it away from everyone has it kind of as a commodity and makes it so that it's worth something when you go and get it. So then not everybody drives a little bit more responsible that way too. Because nobody wants to lose all of that initial invested money.
Well, that's another, and that's another reason why in a region like that, this idea of a service where you're not paying, I mean, you don't have to buy a license, you don't have to buy a registration, you don't have to, you know, you just pay X into the service, and that's covered by part of whatever your monthly fee is.
Yeah. It would totally work in New York. I mean, when I was growing up as a kid, we always had dreams of having cars, but we didn't really think you'd ever get a car. Because even in New York in the 80s, it was about, like, yo, having a car would cost you $20 an hour to park. Now it's close to 40.
Yeah.
You know, so we subwayed and yellow cabbed everything.
Yeah. I think in every bigger city in Europe that is happening, I mean, there's cabs, there's public transport, and then there's car sharing, a lot of car sharing, actually. So you really don't need a car anymore in big cities.
But not with an automated driver. I agree.
Not with an automated driver.
Yeah.
That's true. But that is coming. I mean, that's the next step then.
The federalist element of regulation is the biggest hurdle of all told. I'm going back 20 years, but more than 20 years. Having driven in Taiwan, you pull up at a set of lights and you get motorbikes filtering down through four lanes of cars. And when those lights go green, you've got literally 1,000 motorbikes and 250 cars, like a friggin' Le Mans start, going off. It is not a joke. I'm not joking.
No, I know.
Crazy.
It's a funny visual.
I was sitting there in a Fiat, and I was shitting my pants. And I was three lanes back from where this thing was going off. There was four lanes of traffic, plus, like I said, 1,000 motorbikes all starting off all at once. And I can't believe that China's any different from that, especially because you're talking about not, you know, in Taiwan it was all motorbikes, but in China you could be talking motorbikes and mopeds and cycles, you know, physical push bikes. And the thought of all of that starting off with an automated vehicle, an entirely automated vehicle, it's just, you know, God, someone's going to die. I'm sorry.
Or the car is never going to start because it doesn't.
Yeah, computers that are programmed, though, to do what they're supposed to do don't make mistakes. Humans make mistakes.
Oh, mate, the rules of Asimov would have been thrown out in this little melee. Most definitely. It was unbelievable. As an experience, I don't recommend it to my worst enemy. Most definitely. Sales continue to slide of Mac computers amidst lack of updates. I've got to say, I think this is the biggest pile of shit of the week, without a question. Automated cars have got more credence than this rubbish. So the trend of the Apple US market share since Q1 06 to Q1 16 is, the trend is up. You're talking about 4% to 14%, and yet they still want to pick holes in the fact that Apple's market share has slid. But actually, it doesn't. So there you go. Commentary. Anyone? Are we ready for?
I mean, it's like anything else. It's slid for the time period that they're looking at. Sure.
Yeah, in the one quarter, and it hasn't actually. Yeah. It's gone up in the last one quarter. It's gone down the previous quarter. It's down based on the previous year.
Right. They're looking at the year over year.
Yeah, year over year is down, but quarter on quarter
is up. 2015 versus that quarter in 2016.
Yeah, and it peaked in 2012 when it hit 14%, but it's been, the general trend over the last 10 years is massively up, 10% up from where it was.
The bigger part of that story, and the accurate part of that story, though, is that Apple needs to put out some damn machines so people have something to buy.
Yeah, I mean, so Adam, your fictitious October event has got to come pretty soon. Otherwise, I'm afraid it's not going to happen.
Right? Yeah, I think it's
already mid-October.
I think I mentioned this last week that I felt like I was wrong on that one. But, you know, this week there was this rumor that, and I think it's not accurate. It sounds crazy to me that they moved the quarterly result call because from a Thursday to a Tuesday, because they're going to do an announcement on that Thursday.
I think I said that last week.
Yeah.
Well, there's also some SEC regulations about
dropping something
before the thing, too, from what I heard. I'm not sure if that's true, but I didn't invent
that
thought. But it makes sense.
Some people are thinking it's to deflect away from the poor numbers that are going to come up for iPhone, which I don't think are going to be as bad as some people are thinking they're going to be. I think they're actually going to look pretty good.
The thing is the timing and the dates, right? Because a lot of people kept going, oh, the numbers have slid. But T-Mobile exec, Sprint exec, and AT&T exec all came out and said this is the most that they've ever sold of a smartphone and the highest demand. So who's right? The reporters making up crap? Or the guys that actually make
money? You're going to get Ewan going.
Dark, steady on, mate. You were the one. You were slagging them right off with me, mate. There is a show title that says if you've pissed off Doc, you've pissed off the world.
No, I'm just saying who's right. I'm not picking a side. I don't know because I don't pay attention to that because it doesn't really matter. I don't know why it's such a big deal anyway. But I'm just saying it's really funny how a lot of the tech pundocracy is saying that it's this way and the guys that run the places that make the money and pay the employees to do this are saying that it's in a positive light. And either way, it doesn't matter. It doesn't change my eggs either way. I can really care. I just don't understand why everyone's such a hoo-ha about it. But we also know that there's definitely going to be an uptick in the next quarter because of all of the Samsung stuff. And just in my Facebook feed, which is not scientific, many of my friends are asking, okay, how do I buy an iPhone and which iPhone should I buy? And can you help me learn how to use it and blah, blah, blah. I mean, it's been 4 days of that.
There's a great point from Mr. Batwinch in the Slack room this week who said, based on the fact that Samsung have completely stopped now the production of the Galaxy Note 7 as a flagship phone, that's an awful lot of people looking for a flagship phone, which it opens up iPhone 7 and particularly opens up Google Pixel. So
I think the 7 Plus, I mean, you think the 7 Plus is hard to find right now? It's going to be impossible now that Samsung's killed the Note.
But
you're going to have so many people who want that large phone.
I still think that the shortage is woeful inadequacy on supply chain. I don't think it's...
I want to bring it back to the Mac for a second because I had a conversation with some other people this week that I found interesting and I want to get your guys' take on this. Speaking of Apple not, you know, putting out new Mac models, you know, everybody's kind of talking about the MacBook Pro, but we were kind of curious and talking about, you know, what's going on with Apple's desktop strategy and... You know, do we think, and I think this is apt to happen, that the iMac may end up being the sole desktop Mac that Apple sells, that the Mini and the Pro are probably done, and they'll just do like an iMac, maybe an iMac Pro, and that's sort of it.
I'm kind of down with that, except for I currently own 3 Mac Minis, and I love my Mac Minis.
I love my Mac Minis, too.
Button things. Yeah.
I think there's a lot of people don't need a screen, so I certainly thank you for that, whoever it was. I certainly don't think that the Mac Mini is a dead platform. Sales may sell differently, but certainly from our viewpoint, I love the Mac Mini. I love the fact I've got separate audio in and audio out on it. That makes a massive difference to the Skywall, and I do not want to see it disappear from its current format.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, neither do I. But I mean, you look at how
it is the desktop drug sale.
How desktop sales are going. Is there really room for 3 desktop models, or can Apple get away with a sub $1,000? You know, if they can get an entry level iMac in the $600 to $800 range, and then some sort of top end iMac with enough performance to sort of get close to where the Mac Pro is, does it make sense for them to have 3 different desktop models, or should it be simplified like the MacBook lineup is?
I think there's multiple questions for multiple platforms there, though. If you're talking about if you focus on Mac Mini, what do people use Mac Mini for? And I think there's an awful lot of enthusiasts will use it as a server. They've got it streaming their movies. They've got it linked up to an external storage device that's 6 terabytes or 8 terabytes that's got stuff on it. They've got the pictures on it. They've got their own music library, or they've got their duplicated music library through Apple Music, or the matching process. So my gut feeling is that there is a market there for the Mac Mini. Is there a market there for the laptop market? Yes, I think there is, but I'm not sure they need as many as they've currently got. I think the 11-inch MacBook Air, as good as it is becoming increasingly irrelevant with the 12-inch MacBook. I've had the experience of USB-C this week, with the GoPro, and I've got to say, if you're talking about Apple hitching its cart to ascendant technologies, then USB-C is that ascendant technology, not Lightning.
Right.
And if you go to the iMac, I don't want a screen. I absolutely don't want a screen. That is my biggest negative. The last thing I need is a frigging screen. I want screen share, and I want to have my Mac Minis doing basic functions for me, and I want it to me to be able to interact it with main computers. And I need the Mac Pro because I want the Mac Pro because of performance. And thanks to everyone who's just provided that sound effect in the last few minutes.
I was going to say, I was wondering.
That wasn't me.
I have no idea who it is, but thank you very much.
It's not me. I have a cold, but I'm...
I think Donald Trump's on the line.
No, because I'd know that, because he'd have his hand on my pussy. respond to my points, other than the Donald Trump one.
You know, the only thing is, like, I agree with you on that point about the screen, because in the mini situation, it's useless, and it's just a bunch of extra real estate that's not needed. But the other thing that it also does, and this might be small for some people, but in other places where power is expensive, my favorite things about the mini is they don't pull a lot of juice when it's just sitting there doing nothing. It's not until I start taxing my Plex server, or, you know, if Patrice is watching my Plex server from Germany or something. Other than that, it's just kind of sitting there not drawing much power. But if you got a screen on and, you know, every single network connection wakes up the damn thing, I don't know. I agree with you. I think the whole concept of getting rid of a screenless thing is dumb, unless they can find a way to work it into, say, an iPad that's like a mini specific, you know? Like, if you can make an iPad device that does what the mini does, I'm down with that. But if you can't, leave it alone.
That's a cracking idea. I like that already.
Mac Mini 728 days since the last update. Mac Pro 1,029 days since the last update.
Yeah, you remember everyone was all about the trash can pictures and the basketball.
Well, see now, I think they hit. Tell me the last time that you've got 5+ years of cheese grater there.
Yeah, but they were at least revving them and updating them in those years. They didn't go 5 years between updating them.
Yeah, but they're going to rev this one. I mean, the high end of the Mac Pro is way beyond.
I'm with this thing. I don't think they are. I think they're going to go down to one desktop model.
Oh, my life.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. No, that's fine.
I'm not saying it's the right strategy, but to me, it's starting to feel that way. I hope I'm dead wrong. I really hope I'm dead wrong. I want to see a mini update. I want to see a pro update. I'm not hearing anything related to that in the rumor mill. They're showing no signs of life on either of those models.
No, it's okay.
I got a question for you guys.
We got 25 minutes before the big show starts, so we haven't got time for the cool things. I'd rather continue this conversation. Keep going.
I got a quick question for you guys. Okay, so I personally own one. It's in a drawer because I after I figured I'll switch Plex over to the Mac Mini, and went back. But I have an Intel
stick. What do you own?
An Intel stick. And an Intel
okay, thanks, man. I thought you were talking about a rampant rabbit there for a second.
I'm going to finish. Hold on. It's basically what's inside of a current Rev MacBook, right? That's exactly what it is. If you look at the current Rev MacBook logic board, you look at an Intel stick, they're basically identical twins.
Okay.
What if they released the Mini almost as an Intel stick? So all it is an HDMI dongle that you stick into the back of any television or HDMI monitor, and you basically have all the function of a Mac Mini.
That's cool.
And I'm not sure if you guys ever seen the Gigabyte Bricks, but mine's over there connected. Yeah, same thing. Gigabyte Brick, also very similar. If they could pull something like that off, I think then that would also be fantastic for the Mac Mini.
That gets interesting, especially if you think about rumors of Apple doing an ARM-based Mac. The Mac Mini would be a ideal platform to do that experiment on, I think.
How many people here? How many of you guys were the Mac Mini was their path to Mac? Because certainly me, I got a Mac Mini G3, and that was what was my path to Mac. Absolutely, and from having that for only a couple of months, I ended up with a G3 iMac.
It was my first dedicated podcasting rig set up.
That's my thought process. Is if you're talking about people who are looking about transferring from from PC to Mac, as in Windows PC, that the Mac Mini was always the drug sale. It was always the path through from
yes.
the dark side.
Yeah, I just have a feeling for a lot of people though that path to the Mac is moving more and more toward an iPad. As odd as that sounds, but think about what a lot of people bought a Mac Mini for 10 years ago or 5 years ago and what you can do with a current gen iPad.
Yeah.
A lot of that computing is the same.
I think also you're talking about basic MacBook Airs. I don't use my MacBook Air, my 11-inch MacBook Air at all anymore. And actually, it would fulfill the role that my Mac Mini does at home for being a media server.
You know, what's kind of crazy is back in the day, I had a client who had a legal office with like 30 PCs, and he was just really, really mad at the support he was getting from Dell and whatnot. So when I was working at Apple, I basically sold him a bunch of Mac Minis and installed Windows 7 on every single one of them. And basically, they just run them in boot camp mode the whole time. Just because if anything goes wrong, they can bring it to a store like 2 blocks away and get some repair done. So I think there is a lot of people in that special case. And also, this is the size I'm looking at, guys. This is a brick. I swear it's about 4.5 inches square, HDMI ports. This is made by Gigabyte. You got two USBs in the front and then all of that in the back. And it's a pretty powerful computer. This one right here is a Core i5, but I mean, you can get them higher. So this, if they can come out back with something like this and then get it down to the price of these, because these are only like $300, oh, I'm in there.
I mean, you don't need a massive. I mean, the Raspberry Pi will act as a media server for you if that's what you need.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need to spend megabucks on it, which I think maybe. And you're right. The $399 price point is actually hurting them. When actually, that's an incredibly low price point for the computer that you're getting.
Yeah, and I mean, if you need a media server, you can now go to. I mean, or you can soon go to Plex Cloud. And I think it's $60 a year, and then you have basically everything in the cloud.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's getting rough in the desktop market. And again, this idea of, is there really room in Apple's, throwing out our desire and love for the machines, is there room or is there place for all of these machines in their desktop lineup? That was really the question that we were kind of pondering.
Yeah,
I think really honest with myself and think about it purely from Apple's perspective, it kind of doesn't feel like there is.
Well, I mean, I said it last year when everyone was talking about the fact that the iPad sales were down and saying, yeah, but it still sells 5 times more than any other pad. Well, that's okay, right. But the problem you've got is if your infrastructure is set up to sell 20 million units and you're only selling 10 million units, you're operating at a loss. That's the problem. It's not about how many you sell relative to the rest of the market. It's how many you sell relative to your own expectations. So if you're talking about the production costs of a Mac Pro compared to what you're currently getting, if you're saying, right, we're going to sell 20 million Mac Pros this year and you're only selling 15 million, it doesn't matter what the rest of the desktop market's doing. You are 5 million units down on your estimated costs. And that is an issue. That has an issue that has to be resolved somehow against your bottom line. And it doesn't matter whether the rest of the business is coining it from an iPhone. The iPhone business is an entirely separate business from the Mac Pro business in the eyes of Tim Cook.
But I think it's not entirely 100% true, because I mean, if you sold, I don't know, 15 million and you expected 20 million, but I mean, from a cost perspective, you need, I don't know, 5 or 10 million to get even, then, or to I mean, so it makes sense for the product to exist or to even be produced and sold, then it's okay. I mean, it's still less than your expectations, and you should definitely think about the next round and maybe produce less and cut costs or whatever. But it still is a business that is making money. So it's not as easy.
Companies don't operate on whether they're making money or not. They work on whether they're making the percentage of profit that they expect, not whether they're making money. So you can get a company that is making 3% profits on its line. If it estimated 10% profits on its line, it will still cut that line at 3%. It is not about just making a profit. It's about making the profit you expected That is a naive view in the way that your EBIT of expectation has to be.
But Ewan, there are certain parts to the cost of a product. There are fixed costs and there are flexible costs. And for the flexible costs, you can simply scale down the production and it will work. The issue is more what the fixed costs were, and I mean whether that eats into your profit margin or not. As I said, and if you're expecting, I don't know, you sell 20 million and you will have 39% profit, and you sell 15 million and you still are at 39% profit, then that's okay.
Agreed. But I don't know that Apple is at that point. And I think they caught a cold over the iPad a year ago, because that was the massive sales purge that they had on iPad 12 months ago, was because they got to that crux point of the fact that, you know, okay, we're selling iPads, we're selling more iPads than anyone else is, but actually the unit value of profit is down exponentially against what we forecast.
I think there's a wider picture, isn't there? Because this isn't just about Apple. This isn't just about, you know, Mac desktops making the sales, or iPads or whatever. This is the wider issue is actually that the market's now becoming saturated. There's only so much that, you know, that the future is kind of going to hold for our handheld devices and our desktop devices even. The convenience is what stops you from, you know, buying a desktop versus buying an actually equally powerful MacBook Pro, for example, or not quite as powerful but does as good a job on the go. But the reality is what we're seeing now is the new phones and the new devices that are coming out every year are no longer, or you say every year, every quarter now, are no longer providing that that future technology. You know, the future is here, and I think we're not buying it anymore because we've got what we wanted and we're happy with what we've got.
That is true.
Yeah.
That definitely makes it a little bit harder, because normally what they've been able to pull off in the past is the ability to generate something that you don't know you need until you see it, and then all of a sudden you need it. That's been their last couple of wins. So based off of what you just said, we're in a holding pattern.
No, it's not a holding pattern. It's simply a factor of a mature product. Once a product is mature, once it is stable and does exactly what people expect, it's simply not exciting anymore. There is nothing really exciting going on that you want, and that just happens. It kind of is a commodity at this point.
And the product that they've made is beyond Moore's Law and is actually performing adequately significantly down the line. Yeah. That's a big issue. Yeah.
Yes, that's so true.
I've got an iPad 3 that I run in the little workbench that I've got that I found on the sofa, and it runs 10. It works absolutely beautifully. There is nothing wrong with it. It plays iTunes. It does anything I want it to do, and it's a version 3 iPad. It's crazy. Mm-hmm. It's four versions back, effectively.
Yeah, I still have my iPad Air, the first one.
That's been a great show, and I really would like to continue that conversation, but in 15 minutes we've got to start the big show. There's a lesson for you in starting on time. If you run a podcast, start on time and do what we do. This podcast is brought to you by UK2 and by Hoya as well. Please support UK2 and Hoya. Go to britishnetwork.com/sponsors and you'll see links to both of those guys there. With UK2 it's dead easy. Renew your website. I've just renewed my website actually through UK2 for my business, Ography Squared. And I got 20% off by using the offer code from BTN. Huzzah! That's all you've got to do. And tweet out, thanks to at UK2 for supporting at British Tech, because we would be lost without them. They pick all the bandwidth up. They pick everything that we've got. The live server, they do the NQL channel and all that kind of stuff. It's brilliant. Thank you very much. And especially thanks to the backroom chaps who've been keeping things going the last week. We've had a few issues and it's been absolutely smooth as silk. And we love them to bits. Thanks to Anders, to Wheaters, to Shads, to Wrighty and to Camps as well, because they've been good. And Hoya, walk into your local opticians and say, do you stock Hoya lenses? And if they go, no, we don't, go, oh, that's a shame, and walk away. That's all you've got to do. Support Hoya because they support us. Where can we get a hold of you? We'll do cool things next week. Everyone bring two cool things next week. Where are you, Adam?
You can find me over at MacCast.com or just look for MacCast on iTunes or Spotify. And you can also find me on the iOS show at theiosshow.com.
And supported by Rogue Amoeba in the future, we hope.
Someday, maybe.
Someday. Mr. Barriff, where are you?
I am at Terry_CY on Twitter, and I am thefrontender. I always forget if it's .com or .co.uk, but one of those two, and you will find me.
That's a great name, mate. Moving on quickly before I get in any more trouble. Doc, where are you, sir?
You can find me all over the internet at DOCROCK and always on this lovely network.
What time is it where you are?
It is now 9:45.
Okay, so you overslept at 8 o'clock.
No, it's because I took some heavy doses of Benadryl because of my nose.
I've got a cold as well, mate. You're in there. Don't worry. Our sympathies exuded to you, most definitely. And last but by no means least, the frozen, if still lovely, Patrice Brendamore.
Yeah, you can find me every week, almost every week here on The Mac Show. Everything I do on thepatrice.com. And as I said, next week in Romania at the Code Camp.
Good, mate. I hope you have a great trip. Let us know how it goes. Send us some pictures.
I will do that. Just follow me on Instagram, then you will get all the pictures.
That would mean I'd have to start an Instagram account, which I'm not going to do.
I will send some
I'd have to gauge my eyes out afterwards. My name's Ian Rankin. You can get me at Ian on Twitter. You can follow us at British Tech on Twitter as well if you want to follow the network. And donate to us via patreon.com/British Tech Network. And please, please, please give us some reviews on iTunes. It makes a world of difference to our ranking. And we'll read them all out. We've got loads to read out on the Big Show and coming up. You got to listen to the Big Show. Big Show's going to be awesome. Most definitely awesome. See you next week, Thursday, live show. Thanks for listening.